The floodgates are open around college football in Columbus, Ohio, and at Ohio State. Just a little bit of a trickle on Tuesday. Welcome to the podcast daily. Now, full disclosure, this show is being recorded on Tuesday afternoon. And as of this moment, Bill Landis and Jeremy Birmingham, only two Buckeyes are officially in the portal. So certainly that number could change by the time that this episode, which we are recording in advance, that's breaking news. The number could change, but it does seem like, Bill, that a relatively slower start than maybe would have expected, though there could be several explanations for that.
Yeah, I think this is, different from the first window where I think guys maybe have had their minds made up for weeks in advance. They're just waiting for the ability to officially jump in. Like, there are like meetings that happen after spring ball that I think can push a guy one way or the other, right? So I think it was Chip Kelly was talking about that after the spring game, where all of the assistant coaches were sitting down with all of their players this week. Like, no one was going out of the building to just talk about where they're at coming out of spring. So there probably will be, I'd imagine, more than just the two that we know now, but maybe that explains why, you know, there wasn't 15 players jumping into the portal on the first day that it opened.
Yeah, and the Buckeyes are like not recruiting this week. They're not going out on the road, because even though they could, which should indicate how pretty important those meetings are, because you don't generally just surrender a week of on the road recruiting to stay inside of the building. But when you have 85 guys who you're trying to parse through where they fit and who they are and how the rotations are going to unwind, it's pretty important to have all those meetings. I know some of them already happened Sunday and Monday, but we'll start to see more, I think, you know, results of those in the coming days.
Yeah, those were scheduled throughout the week. Some are with position coaches, some, as Chip Kelly mentioned, with get to the next level, maybe have meetings with the coordinator or Ryan Day himself. I think we are under the impression that there's also one on Thursday with like everybody on the roster to meet with Coach Mickey Marotti and the strength staff before some guys are allowed to get out of town. If you have online classes or don't have any in-person classes, you might be able to leave for a little bit of a stretch. So some of this stuff will happen in the days ahead. And I think that's, I don't know how to evaluate it one way or the other. Oh, Ohio State had a better Tuesday of the transfer portal opening than we maybe anticipated. That might not mean anything, but it, Bill, I think to your point, it may mean that a bunch of these guys didn't just like have one foot out of the door throughout spring football and were mailing that in. The only decision that was made in advance was Dallin Hayden. And everybody else seems to be willing to at least have these conversations with the coaching staff and then decide on their future.
Yeah, and there's probably some pretty compelling conversation happening there too. With you and I talked about this, Austin, like this new pitch. Pitch is the wrong way to put it, because I feel like sales pitch has like a negative connotation, but like this idea from Ohio State that they're going to have to play depth this year, right? I just think there's an opportunity to not talk guys like back into wanting to be a Buckeye, but maybe like remind them or provide them some clarity on a role that maybe they weren't anticipating for themselves. So maybe that'll protect them a little bit from as big of an exodus, I think, as people just come to expect from any program, really, not just Ohio State.
I think some of that also is that Dallin Hayden is one of the few guys, you know, again, we talked about this pretty extensively on the Roosters show on Monday, but we're not anticipating Ohio State to be in a position where anybody that's significant for the plans for 2024 is leaving. And so, you know, you might see someone in the two deep, but very rarely is it going to be one of these two deep guys. Dallin Hayden is someone who there is film on him playing college football. And I don't think that he would have been as served by playing in the spring game, knowing that maybe he would get 20 touches or so in the spring game if he was there, that he doesn't really need. That's not the case for someone like Cedric Hawkins, who entered the transfer portal on Tuesday, who needed as many reps and to put all those things on tape as possible. So that, I think, plays a role into guys maybe heading into this past weekend having a thought that they were going to leave, but still knowing that they needed to get out there and put the practice reps on tape for people, because that's how they're going to go out and be recruited. So Dallin not needing that, Cedric and most of the other guys who are considering these decisions do need that. So that does add a little different wrinkle for those kids.
Berm, wrap this point up for me then. If you thought that there was a possibility of hitting an over of 7.5 players leaving, does the slow start change anything for you, or does this just mean that the process is playing out?
I think it's just going to play out. I imagine we'll see a little bit of a trickle over the next 2 weeks. There's a lot of time. 14 days is a lot of time for kids to make some decisions and families to make some decisions. But ultimately, even if it's six guys, seven guys, eight guys, whatever that number ends up being, and I think pretty much anything is possible at this point, college football being what it is, without rules, without any sort of guidelines. I mean, Louisville transfer Penny Boone, who transferred into Louisville in January after leaving Toledo, where he had transferred in from Maryland a year ago. And now, like, it's anything is possible. Like, anything is possible. But I think that these next couple weeks, you'll start to see some kids having, there's no rush also, like, to make the decision. So I think a lot of kids could be sitting back and saying, oh, let's see who else pops here and see what openings are available for me. We saw, like, Keandre Lambert-Smith at Penn State, the top receiver for Penn State. As soon as he gets in, like, if you're one of the Ohio State wide receivers that are making some decisions about your future, maybe you wait and see where someone like that ends up before you make that decision. So I would expect that you'll still see somewhere between six to seven to eight guys get in the portal. And as we talked about, like, I don't know that it's anything that people should stress about, and which feels foreign or contrary to, like, what we're trying to do by talking about it all the time. But I don't want people to, like, freak out, but, like, it's worth talking about, but it's like, it's not worth freaking out about.
But managing the roster in this portal age is certainly more fascinating than it's ever been. You and I, Berm, especially, and then Bill and I, the last couple of years, like, we don't speculate about names or individual decisions. Like, we let, it's unfair to do that. We've made that point a number of times, but we are having that conversation more frequently because these windows are happening more often, and it's become a lot more of a conversation than I think me personally that I would want to have. I think that something, I've made this point over and over and over, that the collective bargaining and contracts have to be put in place. But, you know, even if you're not speculating about the individual specifically, you can't just ignore the way that rosters have to be managed anymore and what positions have to potentially be addressed for Ohio State moving forward. Like, that's now become the 365 day a year topic of conversation. So unfortunately, we have to have that.
Yeah, I'd rather contextualize after something happens than hypothesize about why it will beforehand. And I think that that is an important distinction. And it's not, to me, a distinction without a difference. There is a difference. I think generally we can look, like, Cedric Hawkins is a prime example of this. If you look at the Ohio State roster, when he came in the class of 2023, we had a pretty good sense that he was one of the developmental guys on that in that signing class. You look at what's happened at the slot position now with the emergence of Jordan Hancock, the possibility of Jermaine Matthews filling that role. We're starting to see the young guys like Miles Lockhart step into that spot. We're seeing Lorenzo Styles step into that spot. Like, it sucks for Ohio State when safety depth is already a concern that you lose another safety, but Cedric Hawkins was not one of your deep safety prospects or one of the guys that you were counting on in that spot. So now there is an onus on Ohio State and Matt Guerrieri to step up and make sure Jaden Bonsu doesn't leave, or, you know, so now a lot of these conversations change. And I say Bonsu just because I know people have already begun, you know, throwing his name around as a potential guy to leave. But if you're Jaden Bonsu and you've been on campus for 9 months, why would you leave knowing that you're in the two deep at Ohio State? So I don't want to use individual names or really talk about, we think this guy could leave or this guy could leave, because everyone could leave. Like, that's just the world we're in now. I said this, I don't know if I said this on the air or not. We do a lot of talking all the time. Like, I just want people to imagine what the bidding war for Jeremiah Smith is going to be like in December, in January. Like,
or right now, you mean?
Yeah, it's going to be insane. Like, and it's totally legal and there's no way to stop it. So while a lot of those things are not probable, and certainly Ohio State would, you know, have be in a firm position to withstand most attacks from other directions, like, anything is possible. Like, there is nothing that is off the table right now when it comes to college football, and not just roster management, but roster, like, dissolvement. Dissolvement, is that a word?
It works for me. Yeah. It's out there. It's in the TPD lexicon. Right. We had a a head start to talk about Dallin Hayden. So we did that with the impact of his departure from Ohio State and looking at the running back situation. Bill, with Cedric Hopkins now specifically, it doesn't seem like it was a massive surprise to Ohio State, but what did you make of the decision there?
That Ohio State should just cut ties with Coco High School, not go get people from that high school program anymore. It's a fine high school program. It just never really seems to work out for Ohio State and kids from Coco.
They had Javon Boggs, the wide receiver, committed from Coco, who's from Ohio, and he still decommitted.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, actually. But I don't know. Like, it's a depth loss, I suppose. That the thing for me with losing really any safety, but I guess Cedric Hopkins specifically, is just the numbers now. Like, we talked on the daily on Tuesday about how Ohio State does have like certain thresholds would like to be at for each position group, and was already under at safety. Now with Cedric Hopkins gone, I believe they're at 7. Now that's a bit of a moving target, because like that doesn't include Sonny Styles, who could certainly move back to safety if they needed him to. It doesn't include Jordan Hancock, who's like technically in the cornerback room, or Lorenzo Styles, who's also technically in the cornerback room. So I thought Burr made a good distinction there about guys who play the nickel and guys who play deep safety. And Cedric Hopkins, I think, was probably the former from everything we've seen and heard in his short time here. So it's not like dire straits, I suppose, in the safety room. But you know, if you take Cedric Hopkins out of that mix and look at what they have, it's like they have 6 guys that can play 2 deep safety spots. That's probably enough to get through a season. I think Ohio State would like to have more, but I also don't know how you go out into the portal world and say, hey, we have Caleb Downs and Lathan Ransom and a bunch of like guys who are really excited about, who are really young. Would you like to come here and be a backup at Ohio State? I think the answer will most often be probably no. So it's a little light, but I think manageable, especially if you look at some of the guys in the other rooms who could potentially help at safety if needed.
Yeah, it was hard for me to form a strong opinion on this loss when I was writing about it on Tuesday, because we hadn't really basically seen him do nothing, to be honest about it. He wasn't getting like prominent reps that I can recall for Student Appreciation Day. Now, he did play a decent amount. As Berm said, he got some film on Saturday in the spring game. He had 5 tackles. He was one of the most productive defensive players in that game, but not a lot of it was happening during the periods of consequence. So we saw, you know, he didn't get his black stripe off until December. How much stock you want to put in that is up to anybody else to decide. I don't think it's a make or break anymore, although that is a lengthier process than many other guys in his class were going through. So he wasn't ready to play as a true freshman. That's not an indictment on anybody. Could have been. He has the physical tools. He was a 4-star. He could move well. Played to your point, Bill, at a pretty prominent school down there in Florida, at least plays good competition. It's like he could have become something that was important to Ohio State, but it wasn't going to happen this year, even with the numbers in the secondary and at safety specifically, the other people that are there. And I can understand if he didn't want to be part of a longer-term 3-year plan to break into Ohio State's lineup. So in the short term, it didn't feel like it all that impactful of a loss. Is it someone that Ohio State wants to see walk out the door for their future plans at safety? Probably not, but this is the way of the world at this point. That bottom third of the roster churn that Berm has fully embraced and loves so much now, these are the kind of players that will be more difficult to retain.
It's just a situation where you can start to look ahead and predict how things are going to unfold when you see second year guy is behind third and fourth year guys, but is also at the risk of being passed up by first year guys. Like that's just the way it's going to go. And
then take a look at the recruiting class on top of that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what was happening here. That's what was happening here. And you are going to see these situations unfold this way. I think what's interesting is where Ohio State goes as far as replacing these players, because I don't know, as you said, like, if it's going to be worthwhile to go out into the transfer portal and bring in another guy who is going to be a third or fourth team guy. Like, is that worth it? Or, as I think that they're going to do at running back, with the likely promotion of TC Caffey to the scholarship list, does it make sense, knowing that you can do this on a year-to-year basis for kids that are like walk-ons, Does Inky Jones just get promoted and get a scholarship? Because I don't know that you're actually, I mean, we've seen him flash this spring multiple times. Is it actually worth going out and saying, okay, well, we lost one scholarship player. Now we have to replace him with another guy, a fourth string safety from Arkansas. Like, I don't know that that's necessary or beneficial for anyone.
We've also heard a number of times how difficult it is to learn the Jim Knowles system at safety. And I think it's considered a safety driven defense. So at this point, once you get past spring, like, Inky Jones would seemingly have a pretty significant advantage of somebody coming in from the outside. Now, there's other ways that you could potentially address that. Someone who's, I don't know, had experience with Matt Guerrieri somewhere else or whatever. Like, there are ways around that you could get somebody up to speed and veteran football players. But what we saw through five viewing periods and two full practices of Inky Jones was pretty darn good. So that's the same thing with TC Caffey. You're looking at positions where walk-ons were already getting meaningful reps in spring and catching the attention of an amateur like me. I'm not a professional evaluator, and like thinking that he could play at Ohio State. So I'd be curious to know what the coaches think about that. We already know how it applies to TC Caffey, but in this case, I would really like to talk more to Matt Guerrieri and Jim Knowles about Inky Jones, because like I've been gushing about the last two or three practices that I saw from him that were so good.
Yeah, I think you're more than likely not going to be able to go out and find somebody who can, like a guy who's played elsewhere, the caliber of athlete that Ohio State wants in this scenario at that position. So I think it's probably a better course of action to put someone like Inky Jones on scholarship if one becomes available, and there probably will be, and then focus more on addressing the hole in the room via high school recruiting. Like, maybe this means you take another safety in the 2025 class or something like that. Like, running back's a different proposition because of, you know, it gets to a freshman. Yeah. Like, who is your running back three right now? I don't know the answer to that, but you have to go through five or six guys in the safety room that you know can play, I think, those two deep safety positions before you'd have to worry about anything.
And it's a nice way to reward walk-ons who have put in the time and energy and effort, who also have opportunities to go elsewhere and are choosing not to. So I think that's the tact I would take. But again, I'm not in charge. Nobody asks me.
Everybody asked you. That's why you're here. Oh. You're the most important member of any team.
Oh, thanks.
Except for Bill. You guys are tied. And Bill, you're writing later on Wednesday about what you saw from Will Howard. That'll be on ohiostate.rivals.com. It's also going to be out on the subtext. There's be some breakdown of at least one throw or a couple throws there. What did you find in your sixth rewatch of the Ohio State spring game?
it was good. Like, it's interesting to me that there are hard opinions like on the quarterbacks either way. Like, I saw both. Like, Will Howard's definitely the guy, and like Devin Brown was the best quarterback in the spring game. And my read was just like they were fine. Like, no one really jumped off the screen at you, I don't think, in rewatching the game. But if we're to assume that Will Howard is going to be this team's starting quarterback in the fall, and I think it's reasonable to assume that, there are like things that he showed in that game that I thought were promising, and then some things that are carryovers from Kansas State that you'd like to see him improve upon a little bit. Some of like the downfield throwing stuff, not even like accuracy, because that's hard to judge. Like, it was pretty windy. Like, I don't want to make too much of like him being a little short on that ball to Jeremiah Smith in the end zone, or like a slightly off target on the one to Emeka that kind of hit his hands in the corner of the end zone. Maybe on a normal day, like those are touchdowns. But like some of the checkdowns he took, I thought maybe he had an opportunity to throw it deeper down the field. Like, I'd like to see him be a little more aggressive, I suppose. But I thought he was really good, like in the RPO stuff. I thought he was really good with the pocket movement and creating some opportunities to get a throw off that Ryan Day was talking about. And those are the kind of things that I think ultimately they need. Like, I don't know that Ryan Day is looking for, you know, the next version of CJ Stroud. He'd love to have him, but it's not on the roster or ready to play right now. But if it's a guy who can like handle some pressure, move around a little bit and get throws off that they weren't able to get off last year, then I think that's probably all Ohio State needs with what's around them. And I thought Will Howard showed some of that on a very small sample size in the spring game.
I finally rewatched the spring game, and I sort of forgot that Will was 9 of 10 at one point before throwing three straight incompletions on his last red zone attempt. But one, I thought Emeka was interfered with. The second one, I thought Emeka slipped and fell. And then there was the other one to Jeremiah, but like played pretty well. I don't think that you can knock what Devin did or anybody else who's, like you said, I don't know how anyone's forming a hard opinion one way or the other. Devin completed five passes. One of them was a 25-yard pass. One's a 20-yard pass for a touchdown. Like, I mean, it just seems like it's six of one, half dozen of the other. But I definitely thought that Will looked more comfortable in the pocket than Devin upon my rewatch, which is something that I guess was not altogether surprising because that's where that experience really pays off, you know?
Yeah. I also thought too that the end zone throws that Will Howard didn't complete. I don't think in a normal game that Ohio State's going to get like to the 18 and just try to throw it into the end zone four times. Like they're going to try to move the ball maybe a little closer by running it. Like that very much felt like let's try to get a highlight for Jeremiah or let's see if we can't get a throw that's going to get everybody excited and not necessarily how they would operate in a real game.
After all we talked about with the, you know, diversity in the rushing attack and the quarterback run game, and it's like, no, they're just gonna, if you get to the high red zone, all you can do is throw it deep. That's it. Yeah,
right. I mean, it's not a terrible plan when you have Jeremiah Smith, but I do think they try to run it at least once in that scenario.
Hey Berm, you know that St. Patrick's Day is March 17th and not April 17th, right?
What?
I'm just wondering the shirt selection for April 17th. You're a month behind, buddy.
Yeesh.
He's celebrating Canadian St. Patrick's Day.
Oh,
my sincere apologies. That's really embarrassing. No, I wore this because today is my wife's birthday, and I want her to know that I'm going to be open and available for bevies all day long.
Oh, well, I can certainly get behind that idea. Thanks for joining us on the podcast daily for Wednesday, April 17th, which is not St. Patrick's Day, but any day can be St. Patty's Day if you want it to be in your heart. For Bill Landis and Jeremy Birmingham, I'm Austin Ward. We'll be back with more on the podcast daily. We'll see you later.